It's really funny that the last time we had a monarch saint, the reading was about how hard it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And then today we're given one of the others, and there's not too many, monarch saints. Then we're given this particular passage where it's, blessed is the faithful steward who does his job, basically. And that's exactly what a king is in the Christian conception of the universe. He is not actually the king. Christ is the king. Christ is the king not only for the fact that he made the world and it's his property, but it's also his. He's the king because he redeemed the world and therefore revealed himself, not just in terms of being legitimate because of ownership, but legitimate because of love. If there is anyone who deserves to rule, it's him. Because he has revealed his heart, he's revealed his intentions, and the world knows who he is. And so one of the things about us beginning to share his crown is that all of us, in a sense, are royal. But we have to go through the same testing. We have to, in a sense, have our hearts revealed. And that's just unpleasant. That's incredibly unpleasant. Because we don't actually know our own hearts. And sometimes trials and tribulations are not just things that we endure, but those are moments when we really realize, like, the strength of our own character. And it's often not as strong as we think. How often do we avoid certain circumstances because they make us feel bad about ourselves? Because it's like, oh, I guess I'm just not strong enough to handle that. Now, as a Christian, we should, in a sense, have a certain almost humble joy about it. All right, there's my limit. I can't go past that. I'm not wise enough, strong enough, patient enough, clever enough to be able to handle that kind of situation. I'm out. And that is why monarchs are in particular danger. Particular danger. And this is why, in the Christian understanding of the world, again, being blessed with power is a curse. St. Benedict starts the monastic revolution in the Western world, and they treat the abbot, the job that everyone seemingly would want, as almost like a quarantine. They give the abbot lifetime authority, not because anyone wants the job, but because as long as that guy's alive, we don't have to worry about it anymore. Just push it under the rug. Nobody wants it. And of course, gradually that changes from time to time and from monastery to monastery. Because when a Christian is given power, we understand that it brings out the best in us, but it also brings out the worst. And that even those innocent small choices that we think are rather harmless, in the long run, cause some damage. Here's some context then for King St. Louis. This guy is about as good as a monarch you will ever see in human history. And still very, very flawed. He became king around the age of 12. He was born in 1214. His mother was the queen regent kind of person just prior. When he was young, she was basically running the show. And one of the things that she had to deal with at the very end of her reign was what's called the Cathar heresy, or the Albigensians. And these guys, in short, were theological pessimists. They thought marriage was evil, they thought the body was evil, they thought the world was garbage, and they only respected people who were incredibly austere. And the funny thing is they reflect, in fact, our own modern preoccupation with absolute perfection, or we won't believe. We've been affected by certain scandals in the last century, and so now we've grown to be so cynical that we don't even pay attention to the fact that it's a fundamental Christian teaching that, yeah, people are good and bad. We almost, like, when we hear on the news that a bishop or a president or something is morally flawed, we're, like, heartbroken about it. But then, maybe just a few generations prior, everyone knew that JFK was a philanderer. But now we're like, oh, God, it turns out that men are not perfect all the time. It's like, okay, great, figure it out. But the despondency that comes upon it, and so then this despondency freaked the medievals out, terrified them. So they wanted to wipe it out. And so there was this Albigensian crusade, and his mother helped basically facilitated, and then they were able to finally unify the large territory of France. Because up until that point, the barons and all the nobles basically had divided France up into a number of different subsections. Louis was one of the first real kings of France. But it wasn't just because they were able to actually put it all together. He also forbade trial by combat or trial by ordeal. You think that's a small deal, but that's really hard. He's fighting against centuries of tradition to be able to secure this kind of thing. He prevented his barons from fighting wars inside his kingdom. You think that's easy? That was not easy. He, in fact, set up all these different protocols preventing them from just launching random wars with each other for power and security. Because who were the real victims of these wars? The poor. You want to know that one of the other ways in which the poor were rapidly and horrifyingly abused? Something that we take for granted. Money lending. Anybody who walks by a money tree, money lending store, especially all those ones that are all over Quadra Street, just by Bay, Quadra and Bay, there's all these different money lending stores. It is not a coincidence that it's right next to low-income housing. These businesses are leeches against the poor. Because if you're paying interest on things that you need, you're toast. And if any one of us has capital, background income, we don't need to lend money. Watch how much money, less money you spend on a car or on a home than a person who has to take a loan out on pretty much everything. He forbade that. Now, mind you, that did have a dark side. Why did it have a dark side? Well, the Jewish people were pretty much the only money lenders in Europe at the time. So you see how good things are often tinged with bad things? He tries to protect the poor, and sometimes there's some problems that he has with the Jewish people. In fact, even during his reign, a guy translated the Talmud, and then Christians were scandalized by how much Jews were mocking them behind their back, and it resulted in another persecution in Louis's own time. He was the one that had built, basically, the Sorbonne in Paris, the now famous university. He built that. The Saint-Chapelle, the most beautiful church in Paris. He built that. Most of the great institutions, the rule of law, all of these things, he pretty much established them. But most interestingly, he always gave preference to the poor when they came to him for an appeal. For us, we can't even imagine visiting the President of the United States or the King of England or Queen of England, whatever. We can't imagine just visiting a monarch. But he had an open door policy. He invited the poor to his state dinners. He would wash their feet publicly to make a statement. And he did this because he was a saint. Not because he was a particularly crafty political man. He was. He was a very shrewd negotiator. He was a very good politician. But because he was so good, the world around him started to take notice. And the other monarchs were then shamed into action. They themselves were not the greatest of kings around him, but because his people loved and admired him so much, he made all the other kings realize that this is how they should rule, this is how they should govern, this is how they should help their people. Didn't last very long, but it was still something that should be done. And this is precisely what Jesus is referring to. Each and every one of us is royal in our own life. Even if it's your own household, even if it's your job, even if it's just the control of your own impulses. You are a king. You are a queen. And so when we get the habit of being unnecessarily critical of those in power, we honestly have to ask ourselves, if every dark corner of my life were revealed and made public to the world, would I be as pure as I'm criticizing other people for being? I'll pretty much guarantee you I won't be. I don't know about you guys, but I won't be. So knock it off. We do the best we can with what we got. And every now and again, it's great to have an example that leads the way for us. and that we generally can't change the world through massive plans and organizational things and some kind of ridiculous expectation of purity. That's how you wind up becoming a southern heretic in the south of France. There is, however, a beautiful and humble way in which we can live as Christians. Now, sometimes it might seem kind of ridiculous to have a reading like our first reading today. It's basically a greeting. You know, like today's first reading, he's basically saying, okay, say hi to Sosthenes for me. Say hi to this person. I'm greeting you from this particular place, and I'm talking to you guys. This helps us, even this small snippet, helps us realize that a majority of the scriptures were not planned. Paul wrote this letter to respond to a particular question in a particular time, in a particular place. No one knows who Sosthenes is, and most of us don't care. But the wisdom remains. We don't need to make the world perfect. We need to do our best in the moment. And there's a chance that we might leave our Saint-Chapelles behind too.